Emily, and this is NHPR News. It's now 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. A state Senate committee recently heard heartbreaking stories about the suffering of very ill Granite Staters who want the relief they say medical marijuana would provide, and they want it soon. Although New Hampshire last year approved the use of what's called therapeutic cannabis, the system for distributing it to patients is far from up and running. So earlier this year, the New Hampshire House overwhelmingly passed a bill allowing patients to grow just two plants until the state-approved dispensaries are open and official patient cards have been given out. Now that bill's before the Senate, which appears to be struggling with how to respond, especially given Governor Hassan's strong opposition to grow your own. But this isn't the only debate over the new law. Others have floated around the State House as well. Today in The Exchange, new challenges for medical marijuana in the Granite State. Let's hear from you. 1 year in, how do you see this law's rollout, and what models do other states provide for New Hampshire? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. We have three guests in studio. With us is Lieutenant John Encarnacio, Lieutenant with New Hampshire's State Police Narcotics Investigations Unit. Lieutenant Encarnacio, good to see you. Welcome back.
Thanks, Laura.
Also with us, Michael Holt, Rules Coordinator at the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services. He's been working on the rules surrounding this new law. And Michael Holt, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Ted Wright, Republican representative from Tufton Borough, and he's also a sponsor of that Grow Your Own option that I mentioned. And Representative Wright, it's good to see you, too. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And I also want to let you know that all three of our guests here in studio serve on the state's Therapeutic Use of Cannabis Advisory Council. And Representative Wright, I did want to start with you. You've been a strong backer of medical marijuana. What were your hopes when this passed into law last year?
The initial concern is to get access for patients that's safe and also to protect them from arrest under the law.
So when you first got this signed into law, I guess it was last June or July when the governor finally signed it, what was sort of on your mind and on your heart when this finally was passed and approved?
Well, the next step, of course, is to implement it. And that was foremost. The law changed from what it was in the House initially. The home cultivation option was stripped out. The affirmative defense was stripped out. And post-traumatic stress disorder was taken out in order for the governor to sign it.
And just clarify for me, if you could, please. I'm familiar with Grow Your Own. The House had wanted that. The Senate said no. The PTSD to be included on the list of ailments that this would be available for, that was taken out. Affirmative, what was the other thing you said? I'm not familiar with that.
It's called an affirmative defense. There is an affirmative defense in the law as it is today, but it will only help those patients once they have ID cards. And our hopes were to protect patients from arrest right away.
And you have a personal interest in this, don't you, Representative Wright?
I do. My wife has stage 4 metastatic breast cancer and has used cannabis to help her through a phase 1 clinical trial.
Because she lost a lot of weight a scary point.
That's right. She hit 32 pounds, lost 32 pounds, and they said, we're going to have to take you off the trial.
Because you're just too thin. It's not safe.
There's no sense in being on a trial that's killing you.
So through the use of cannabis, she was able to regain appetite and regain some weight.
That's correct. Within 3 months, she gained all the weight back.
Well, Lieutenant Encarnacio, I did want to turn to you as well. And you and I have talked about this before. Law enforcement had some qualms about this medical marijuana bill. What were your concerns when the legislature was first going through this process last year?
Well, first, I want to just make it very clear that our position is we don't want to keep any substance out of the hands of people that are sick and dying, and that it helps.
Like Representative Wright's wife.
Exactly. Our concern is the abuse of cannabis and other drugs and the access that other people that shouldn't have it could possibly get, particularly children. So that's really what our focus has been on, and that's what our testimony has been in our position throughout the process was to come up with a law that's going to limit that access, but still allow those individuals who benefit from this cannabis in a legal way to get some kind of relief.
What have you seen in other states where that has happened, Lieutenant Encarnacio, where it's gone beyond just the very ill people like like Representative Wright's wife?
Well, I think some of the other states that we've looked at have not planned ahead, so to speak, and we're learning from them. We have had the opportunity to look at a number of other states as to what has worked and what has failed. And that's part of the reason we have an advisory council. And together, we're trying to work through this stuff so we don't see the same mistakes here in New Hampshire.
So, Michael Holt, just give us a sense of what you have to do at DHHS to kind of put all the pieces in place to make this work in a way where very ill patients are served. But as Lieutenant Encarnacio says, it doesn't leak out into the broader society, so to speak.
Well, the department is the agency that's responsible for implementing the program. We did not take a position on the bill or on the program itself, but we do have the responsibility for implementing it. It has the full support of the commissioner. It's an important initiative for the department. It is department-wide. And Commissioner Tupis has emphasized a department-wide business model approach involving multiple divisions and offices within the department, from the Project Management Office, the Bureau of Licensing and Certification, Public Health Division, the Finance Division, Contracting Unit, and the Rules Unit, where I work. We're in the process of developing the program and making it stand up.
What are some of the things that you have to look at? I mean, for example, you know, who gets the cards and who doesn't? Who's a qualified doctor and who isn't? I mean, what are some of the details that you have to look at to make sure that this works as intended?
Well, the law is very prescriptive, and the legislature has told us a lot of what we have to do. But some of the deliverables that we need to come up with are two sets of rules. One set of rules is on the patient registry, basically how patients and caregivers apply for a card. The second set of rules is on the alternative treatment centers. Those are the dispensaries.
Four of them, right? Just four.
A maximum of four have been allowed in the state. And so we're working on those rules as well.
All right. Well, let me invite our listeners to join us. I know they'll have a lot of questions for all of you. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. About 9 months into New Hampshire's new medical marijuana law, we're looking at how it's going, some of the concerns about the law, some of the questions that have come up. Let's hear from you. Almost a year in, how do you see this law's rollout? What have you seen in other states that might provide a model for New Hampshire to either copy or avoid? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. You can post a comment there if you like. So, Representative Wright, as I said, it's been about 9 months since Governor Hassan signed this law. What has happened since and what has not yet happened?
Well, the department has developed or starting to develop rules for the ID cards. That's pretty much all we've done so far.
Did you think it would be further along at this point?
No, that's legislatively how it was set up. They had until July to get the cards ready. And then in January 2015 to license the ATCs.
So you have a bill, right, to allow a grow your own while we're waiting for this process, because if you're sick, it's a long time to wait.
That's correct. Just licensing an ATC is not going to be the end of the development of this project or program. Once an ATC gets their license, then they'll have to go to the town and go through the zoning and planning process, which is, I assume, is going to be a little difficult because some people or some towns may not want this in their backyard. And then once they get those approvals, then they'll build a building or renovate a building. And then after that, so you're looking at another 6 months for that, and then they'll start to grow. And the grow cycle on this is somewhere around 4 months.
Wow. Okay. So we're talking chunks of 3, 4, 5 months at each step of the way. ATC, by the way, stands for?
Alternative Treatment Center.
Okay. That's what I thought. Yeah. So this grow your own option passed the House overwhelmingly and by like a 3-to-1 margin. How does the Senate feel about this?
That's a good
crystal
question.
Crystal ball.
That's a good question. They were hesitant to support it last year, so that's been my take on it. Some of them are still hesitant before we implement the law to change it. But my concern is to get access immediately for patients.
Given your personal experience,
right.
Again. Lieutenant Encarnacio, I know this is a struggle for law enforcement, the grow your own. Tell us what your thoughts are on this, please.
Well, we see a lot of potential for abuse with the grow your own, and we are not in support of that part of the bill.
Draw out for us, if you could, Lieutenant Encarnacio, some of the issues that come up if this option were in place for you from a law enforcement perspective.
Well, obviously, the diversion of the cannabis will be a lot easier, as well as the potential for burglaries, you know, as far as monitoring the amount of plants that are being grown, et cetera. There's a whole slew of things that we have concerns with people growing their own medicine.
So I say that I'm growing it for my sick mother, but I'm actually diverting it to someone else.
Right, and that's really why the entire bill was put into place, so there could be a system of checks and balances. And we feel at this point to circumvent those checks and balances, you know, before they have even been given a chance to get up and going, is counterproductive.
What does the grow your own option mean for, would the grow your own option, because it doesn't have it, what would that mean for Health and Human Services, Michael Holt? What sorts of rules or checks would you have to put in place if this option were on the table?
If this bill passes, it would not substantially increase the amount of regulatory efforts that the department needs to conduct. What it does is puts responsibility on local health officers to go in and inspect people's premises where the cultivation locations are. But for the department, does not add additional burdens.
All right. We'll talk more in just a moment. And we'll start taking your questions and comments. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning. If you know of a college student, a young professional, or a local business that's making a difference in the community, why not nominate them for a Rising Stars Award? NHPR and Stay Work Play are accepting nominations for the awards to recognize young people and innovative companies around the state. You can submit your nomination at nhpr.org. More new challenges for medical marijuana in New Hampshire on The Exchange at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, the promise and perils of a new project to share individual patient records. New Hampshire weather, sunny today, not as cold as yesterday, highs today making it into the mid-40s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Seacoast Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, orthopedics and team physicians for the UNH Wildcats, providing evaluations and surgical interventions for athletic injuries, sosmed.org. And Lutheran Social Services, Good News Garage, accepting, repairing, and providing reliable vehicles to families in need. Donate a car, change a life at goodnewsgarage.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about implementing the state's relatively new medical marijuana law, passed into law last year, but there have been some complaints about the law being too slow to get up and running. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. Your questions, comments, and thoughts on the rollout of the state's medical marijuana law are welcome at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. All three of our guests this hour serve on the state's Therapeutic Use of Cannabis Advisory Council. They are Lieutenant John Encarnacio. He's with New Hampshire's State Police Narcotics Investigation Unit. Michael Holt, Rules Coordinator at the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services. And Ted Wright, Republican Representative from Tufton Borough, who's been actively involved in this issue of medical marijuana. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And gentlemen, let's go to our listeners, take their questions, comments, concerns. Fran is calling first from Jamaica, Vermont. Hi, Fran. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Laura, thank you for having me on again on this issue. First of all, I'd like to identify myself as a patient who does grow his own meds And my cannabis I've been growing for several years now. Had I not had the option to have my own grow, I would not have had medicine for several years, because even with the four dispensaries that we currently have in Vermont, the cost for dispensary cannabis is high. This, of course, is affected by the amount of money that the $30,000 or $20,000 to $30,000 that the state has to that takes from each dispensary. Additionally, it does take, by the way, 6 months to grow the first full cycle. Just to correct the gentleman that said 4 months. First of all, I haven't seen any detrimental effects on the neighborhoods that the dispensaries are in. I am in close touch with the people that run these, at least two of them, and we haven't seen any problem there. The biggest problem, other than the cost factor for someone who can't afford it, is that large crops can be damaged or lost to bugs or other problems with growing. Recently, one of the dispensaries even had a problem with clones they were selling to patients who grow that had bugs on them. So these things can happen. Again, I just don't see the problems that we're having. I do see the benefits that small grows can provide for those who cannot afford the meds, and I encourage the state of New Hampshire to go forward.
Well, and if I could ask you a couple quick questions,
sure.
Fran, because we in New Hampshire are learning so much from other states because we're about, I think we're number 19 or 20 to approve this. So how many dispensaries do you have in Vermont?
Well, technically, they say we have four, but we really have three. Champlain Valley also has Southern Vermont Wellness, which is basically just a delivery point in Southern Vermont, in Brattleboro.
And you have a grow-your-own option, it sounds like, in Vermont.
We do, and about one-third of our patients are growing right now. Of course you're going to have thefts if somebody finds out and they're going to break in, but, you have thefts in drug stores, you have thefts in alcohol establishments, et cetera, et cetera. Unfortunately, we have people in society that do these things.
What are the limits on how much
we have
can
two
grow?
Two mature plants,
two plants.
And seven immature
okay.
plants. At any time, we can keep 2 ounces of usable cannabis that is dried, cured, and ready to consume. And we're allowed to buy clones and seeds from the dispensaries.
Okay, and last question for you, Fran. I really appreciate you filling us in on Vermont. Again, it's interesting. Each state has its own approach. How long a list of medical conditions, Fran, are allowed for Vermont?
Well, we have a fairly limited list of conditions. I'm not going to be able to rattle them off.
Sure.
But, of course, cancer, MS. Recently, post-traumatic stress syndrome is still in committee in Vermont. And they did, I believe, turn down the option to have 2 additional smaller dispensaries, which I think we really do need for those patients, again, who can't grow and cannot travel the distances. But what I've understood is that if a doctor is willing to sign off on a condition, that they are not really turning that patient down at this time.
Okay. Fran, thank you very much for calling in. Really appreciate the information.
Thank you for having the interest in it and running the programs.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Michael, lots of things come up from Fran's call, but one question for me, he mentioned the doctors. How is HHS approaching this issue of which doctors can prescribe therapeutic cannabis, who can't, and whether they're really prescribed them for the conditions that the law says they can prescribe it for?
Well, the law is prescriptive here. It allows physicians and APRNs, advanced practice registered nurses, as providers.
So all doctors, all nurse practitioners.
They need to have a DEA number. So that does limit some physicians. Some physicians would not have a DEA number and could not prescribe drugs.
A DEA is Drug Enforcement Agency. Is
That's
that right?
Correct.
Yeah. And so do most physicians and APRNs, nurse practitioners, have this already, or is that something new that they would have to get?
No, most of them have this already.
Okay. So pretty much any medical provider at that level could prescribe medical marijuana.
That's correct. It is a voluntary a program. There's nothing in the law that requires a physician or an APRN to engage in this program. It's an important distinction to make, though, that the doctors are not required to prescribe or even recommend its use. What the law says is that they have to certify a qualifying condition. All they have to do is say that a patient has one of the qualifying conditions on the written certification form.
That's different from prescribing, isn't it?
That is.
It kind of removes them from legal trouble? Is that – why is that distinction important?
That was the intent to because marijuana is still illegal federally, removing the prescription aspect of this protects physicians.
Yeah, protects physicians from getting into any sort of trouble. Is that
any sort of trouble federally?
Yeah.
Yes, that was the intent. A recommendation made by the New Hampshire Medical Society as the bill was working its way through last year.
Well, and this is another issue that came up earlier this year in February. I think this has to do with the cards and who can get those cards once they're certified by their physician. And as I understand, Representative Wright. There was some push to give people the cards before the dispensaries were even up and running. Tell us what that was about.
That was the intent originally, was to get the cards issued in July, a year after the bill was signed. That would protect them from arrest if they were caught. But the Attorney General's office has advised DHHS that not to issue the cards until dispensaries are up and running.
Because if you're only supposed to get marijuana from dispensaries, why have cards in the first place? Was that the logic there?
I know you disagreed with that logic.
I know. But
it could be. It's kind of a catch-22, though, for patients who are ill now and need it now, because patients are getting it as it stands.
Getting it under the table.
Right, on the black market.
Getting it from other states. Lieutenant Encarnacio, what were your thoughts on this debate a couple months back about whether we should give patients now to at least allow them some legal protection? The Attorney General said, no, this is only supposed to be dispensaries, so there's no point in having a card.
There's really not much I can say to that. It's a legal decision that we're guided by, you know, the opinion of the Attorney General. My personal opinion, you know, in regards to individuals having a card when there's nowhere to get it, Representative Wright is right on with that. If they have a card or if they don't have a card and the dispensaries isn't open, they're going to get it on the black market. And I would say that if they do get it on the black market and they are encountered by law enforcement, if there's some kind of action taken by law enforcement in the form of an arrest, I don't know of any, and there could be some cases out there, but I don't know of any at this point. But I would say that, you know, that would be something to argue in the court.
Yeah. Did you want to jump in there, Representative Wright? And then I have an email I want to share with all of you.
Yes, actually, Maine allows out-of-state patients with cards to purchase in Maine.
I see. But if you brought it back into New Hampshire, you'd be breaking the law.
You'd be breaking federal law.
Okay. Not state law?
That's correct.
Here's an email that came in from Andrew in Tuftonboro. He says he's the Tuftonboro chief of police. He says, Laura keeps saying the home grow provision ends when the treatment centers open. Andrew says, in Representative Wright's bill, if they live far enough away, they can keep growing. Also, New Hampshire allows more marijuana than other New England states. Also, Andrew says there is no practical way for law enforcement to check on cards. He says almost every other state has 24-hour access for law enforcement to review. He says our diversion prohibition in the law is very weak and non-existent for ATC, that's Alternative Treatment Center, and Alternative Treatment Center agents. So Andrew, again, the Tuftonboro Chief of Police, your hometown Representative Wright, he's got a lot of concerns. Thank you, Andrew, for the email.
Right. He's also on the advisory council with us. And he's got some legitimate concerns there. I think looking back, it would have been a good idea to allow 24-hour access to law enforcement. The problem was concerns about the Fourth Amendment.
Now, can you explain that a little bit more, 24-hour access? What does that mean?
Well, so if they pull somebody over on the street at night, say 9 o'clock at night, and they find them with a substance, they would be able to call in and find out immediately whether that patient had the right to have it.
So where's your patient card? Oh, I don't have it.
Right.
So then where do you go from there?
You mean now?
Yeah.
As it stands, they're going to have to – they have to submit a request for that information as the law stands. The other point that he made about the alternative treatment centers coming online, and he's absolutely right. The way the law is written now – or my bill, I'm sorry, HB 1622 – if it passed, if you live within 30 miles of an alternative treatment center, you will no longer be allowed to grow. as they come online. But those people who live beyond 30 miles will still be allowed.
Okay. So, Andrew, thank you for clarifying that. That's an important point. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. All of you, let's go back to the phones. And Marty's calling in from Concord. Marty, thank you for waiting. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Laura. Thank you, everybody, for being there today. I just want to say that I am very happy that this group is looking at this issue with an extreme amount of caution, because there's a lot more that we don't know about this issue than things that we do know. The medical marijuana laws have not been in place long enough for there to be any kind of long-term, meaningful epidemiological work done on the impact that they have on rates of addiction that occur or increase because of their existence in areas. We do know that when we have more access to marijuana, that more people develop substance abuse problems. And we also know that the state of New Hampshire has some of the weakest infrastructure for substance abuse treatment and prevention in the world, at least in the United States. I'm sorry, I should have said in the United States. And I guess what I'd also say is this, is that to increase access to marijuana without having a meaningful dialogue about increasing access and treatment in this state is folly. And it's going to have negative implications on a lot of young people and families in this state that already suffer and don't have access to treatment.
Marty, thank you very much for your call. This is a concern. I'd like to throw it out to everybody, but maybe you first, Lieutenant Encarnacio. New Hampshire does have a problem with substance abuse and not having enough substance abuse treatment. So Marty's saying, go slow with this because there could be potential problems down the road.
Marty's right on. Those are the same concerns that we have. And as far as the treatment aspect, we would like to see something worked into the bill to fund some kind of treatment because...
If addiction does go up.
Addiction will go up. There's no doubt in my mind. Addiction will go up. People will get the medicine that they need, but addiction will still go up. And there has to be something to help fund that.
There will be leakage out into the broader
public,
you're saying.
Yes.
I don't know if anybody knows the answer to this question, but I'll ask you first, Lieutenant Encarnacio. Has anybody measured how much leakage, if I could call it that, meaning medical marijuana getting out to people who don't have a serious illness? Has anybody measured how much that's happened in other states that have this? You know, 20%, 30%? Does anybody look at this?
I'm not aware of any studies pertaining solely to medical marijuana. I know some of the other states that have, particularly Colorado, that have legalized recreational use of marijuana. The incidence of children obtaining that and ending up in the hospital emergency rooms and the incidence of addiction out there has greatly increased.
Do you want to comment on that too, Representative Wright? And then I have another question for you, Michael Holt.
I do.
This is a big concern.
It is. And my concern also would be to keep it away from children, just so that we're clear about that. I think everybody's on the same page there. But with that having been said, the research that I've done through the Centers for Disease Control, their YRBSS data, shows that the vast majority of states that were reporting that had implemented medical marijuana laws saw youth use drop in the years after it was implemented.
Now, untangle that for us a little bit, if you could.
Right. If you look at their data, the number of children that are smoking after they implemented a medical marijuana has actually dropped. So I question the fact that this is going to exacerbate a problem. Patients who need it are getting it, for the most part. There's a subset of patients that will not break the law and will continue to suffer without having access. But for the most part, they're getting it.
And to you, Michael Holt, to the money question, does New Hampshire's medical marijuana law at this point set aside money for implementation, set aside money for possible increased substance abuse problems?
No, that is one of the great challenges that the department is facing, and that is the lack of an appropriation in the original legislation. We've been given no money to implement this program, no increased money for substance abuse or for treatment. We do have a Bureau of Drug and Alcohol Services, and we're working with them on a component of the rules for the alternative treatment centers in terms of educational components that will require the ATCs to provide to patients and caregivers. But no, it's a problem for us to not have any money. This program is supposed to be entirely self-funded. Through fees set by the department. But those fees aren't going to come in until the program is stood up.
Fees on the alternative treatment centers that dispense
marijuana. That's correct, and fees for patients and caregivers to receive their cards. But the vast majority of the money that will be coming in will be licensing fees for the dispensaries.
So right now, the state legislature has passed this large new program. It's a big change, but not appropriated a cent for it.
That's correct. It's a brand new program for the department. We don't have a whole lot of experience in regulating agricultural products over at Health and Human Services. So testing for mold, purity, mites, insects, that kind of thing. There's a lot of learning that we have to do.
Right. Sounds almost like Department of Agriculture.
Perhaps.
Are you getting help from those folks with this, or is it kind of everybody's in their separate silo?
We have not reached out to the Department of Agriculture yet, but we're in the process of developing these rules, and so I wouldn't be surprised if that does happen.
Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. You know, I'm wondering on your end, Lieutenant Encarnacio, again with the State Police Narcotics Investigations Unit, have you guys expanded your staffing or your resources when it comes to the eventuality of medical marijuana?
We have not.
You have not. Do you think you should?
It would be helpful. And I don't know how involved we're going to be once the program gets up and running as far as participating in any kind of enforcement type activities or regulation. We're not necessarily built into the law as far as, you know, being out there providing checks or anything like that. But depending on what is found, when these checks do occur, if there's a violation, we're obviously going to have to get involved as far as seizing plants, taking them into custody, destroying them, and that sort of thing. But at this point, there's no, there hasn't been any change for us.
All right. We will talk more in just a moment. More conversation about some of the issues that are coming up around New Hampshire's new medical marijuana law that passed last year. We'll take your questions and comments to the exchange number 1-800-892-6477.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the promise and perils of a new project to share individual patient records. Then, what we can learn from successful women who are not afraid to take risks. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. New Hampshire weather will have a mostly sunny day today with high temperatures in the mid-40s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from AMV Lumber and Home Centers, featuring windows and doors by Marvin and Integrity for remodeling or replacement projects in Pembroke, Moultonboro, and at ablumber.com. And from the City of Claremont, information about Claremont's investment in sustainable growth at claremontnh.com. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow in The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at some of the challenges that have come up as New Hampshire moves on implementing its relatively new medical marijuana law. Join us with your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. About 9 months in with this law, how do you see it playing out right now in the Granite State? What models do you think other states provide for New Hampshire? 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Joining us now by phone is Sarah Palermo. She's the Concord Monitor's health reporter. And earlier this week, she reported on some new misleading advertising about medical marijuana cards here in the Granite State. And Sarah, thanks a lot for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Laura.
So what exactly were you looking at in terms of this card issue, Sarah?
Sure. Well, I found a series of websites that were linked, and they were all promoting the same class or clinic. They used both words kind of interchangeably, but they were targeting patients looking to get evaluated by a medical professor, start their three-month relationship, and get a card this July. When I called to get more information, the man on the phone wouldn't give me his name. He wouldn't tell me about the classes, who was actually behind them, seeing that all these different websites had different names. He wouldn't tell me about the medical provider supposedly doing the evaluations. He just wouldn't tell me anything.
So these were ads saying, hey, if you're a patient with a serious medical condition and you're looking to get certified in New Hampshire, give me a call. I can help you out.
Yeah, I laughed just because one of the sites had a list of conditions for which you could, quote, probably get certified, and I printed it out just in case the site went away. It was 34 pages long, and it included things like dehydration, ice cream headache, acne.
Ice cream headache?
Yeah, it was a little ridiculous.
So did anyone in New Hampshire actually, you know, shell out the 200 or so bucks that this person was asking for?
Yeah, it seemed that he was asking different people for different amounts. So one person I spoke to said that he had been asked for $50. Another said he had been asked for $268.
Wow.
So far as I know, no one has actually given him money, but that doesn't mean no one has. I did speak with someone else yesterday who called and said that she's had great experience with them and they've not asked her for any money, but it's still concerning.
Didn't people know that this long, long, long list of medical conditions was not the list of medical conditions available for medical marijuana here in New Hampshire? I mean, it's a pretty small list, as we said earlier. People didn't realize that?
I don't think so. I think, you know, it wasn't on their main page. It was on a couple pages that you had to click through. And I think that people in general have been stuck in kind of a gray area. The law, you know, Representative Wright is proposing new laws. Representative Donna Schlackman has, you know, gotten behind some changes. They know that things are changing. They know that this is a very amorphous program right now. And I don't think a lot of patients, unless they're very plugged into the advocacy environment, I don't think they necessarily know exactly what the conditions are that could be certified.
Well, and in your report, Sarah, you did talk to some of New Hampshire's leading advocates for medical marijuana. What was their reaction to this group? I think it was linked to something called the Montana Caregivers Network,
yeah,
which has been controversial.
When I went kind of that, the getting no answers from someone really doesn't make a reporter go away. So I kept digging.
It's a good lesson, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Found out that one of the sites had been registered to the Montana Caregivers Network. And when I brought that out to some of the advocates that I know here, they were very concerned because they're familiar with what happened in that state. Montana passed medical marijuana in 2004, and it was a small program. It was, I think, around 7,000 people out of a population of 1 million had their certification cards. When the Montana Caregivers Network started their work in 2010, that number grew to 27,000.
27,000,
yeah,
wow.
They would travel around the state with a doctor and set up in a hotel and bring in hundreds of patients in a few hours, and everyone would get certified. There were news reports of their facility being raided by police at one point and finding 700 pre-signed certification cards.
Pre-signed?
Yeah. So they were the people here in New Hampshire who are working through the legislature and through the traditional means of regulation and legislation were very concerned when they heard that this might be someone trying to pull the same stuff here.
Wow. So from this experience, Sarah, what's the takeaway for the rest of us here in New Hampshire as we kind of work through this new law?
Yeah, I think the takeaway is buyer beware. It's do your research, talk to people who you know are legitimate. There's several groups on Facebook that are connected through people in the legislature who know what the rules are. Anything that raises your eyebrows, check it out. Get the name of the doctor or the nurse who's saying that they are going to certify you and check and see if they're licensed in New Hampshire.
And by the way, this Montana Caregivers Network was shut down. Is that correct, Sarah?
They still have a website. No one answered the phone when I called. No one has responded to emails, but from talking to the police in Missoula, they said that they've been inactive for a few years.
All right. Well, good investigative work on your part. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Sarah Palermo, again, Concord Monitor health reporter, who dug into some interesting advertising surrounding medical marijuana cards here in New Hampshire, whether they were real or not. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477, with your questions, comments about this issue, 1-800-892-6477. And Lieutenant Encarnacio, this is the fear, isn't it, that, you know, shady operators, if I could put it that way, will set up shop and have pre-signed cards and, you know, be handing them out like candy.
Well, that's always part of the fear. But the fear really is, like I said, the diversion, those other things that I mentioned earlier. This is just somebody that's going to try to take advantage of people. And we see that everywhere. And unfortunately, there has to be some kind of education. Like Sarah mentioned, you know, buyer beware, that this is something new. And there's going to be people out there that are looking to take advantage of others. And it's all about money. In regards to, you know, our real concerns, like I said, it's going through the process, making sure we have, you know, super tight regulation and the product isn't being diverted to children. We don't want to make more work for ourselves by not going through the process now.
What do you pull from this story, Representative Wright? I'm sure it's concerning for you.
I am concerned. It's really important that we have a list that of qualifications or qualifying conditions, and to advertise that there are more conditions that it works for is misleading.
I've heard that in California, too, the list of conditions is pretty loosey-goosey. There's a dispensary on every corner. Anybody can get a card. You know, I've got a cold, and give me some medical marijuana.
Well, California started with Proposition 215. The entire law fit on less than one page, and the last sentence was, anybody who can benefit from it can have it. So they also didn't provide for dispensaries. So that's why you see the DEA cracking down on something that they see operating outside the law.
When you say didn't provide for dispensaries, what does that mean?
There was no law setting up that they set up to guide the dispensaries or even to allow them.
That said that you can only have four, like in New Hampshire.
No,
it was kind of a free-for-all?
Basically.
Okay. Again, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Lots of people who want to jump in with questions, comments on this issue. Scott is waiting in Concord. Hi, Scott. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I understand that there will be four dispensaries approved in New Hampshire. And my question is, how and who will they be chosen by? And will the dispensaries have to grow the marijuana, or will they be able to purchase it from farmers?
Yeah, it's a great question, and lots of details that you're probably still working through, Michael Holt. But go ahead. Thank you for that question, Scott.
Sure. As the caller said, yes, there's a maximum of four allowed. It is the Department of Health and Human Services that will be releasing a request for proposals for people to apply.
A contract, basically.
Essentially. And we will be the ones who will be evaluating those applications, setting the requirements, setting the scoring mechanisms, and then making the final decision on who gets a license.
Do you have the feeling that there'll be a lot of people wanting these licenses, that there'll be a lot of competition for these four slots?
I receive calls almost every day.
Really?
With people asking questions about when the application process will start. with regard to his second question, the New Hampshire law allows or requires a vertically integrated model, which means that these ATCs will need to do everything from cultivation through manufacturing, processing, and retail.
So it all happens at that one alternative treatment center.
Exactly. Other states have models where there's a separate grower or cultivation license, which allows growers to sell to a dispensary. New Hampshire has not adopted that model. So these entities will have to do everything, soup to nuts.
And what's the thinking behind that? The philosophy guiding that? I mean, why did we decide that that was a better way to do it?
You'd have to ask the legislature.
Okay. Legislature, Representative Wright, go ahead.
Well, that's a good question. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I understand it, ATCs will be able to sell to each other.
That's correct.
Right. So there is that provision. If you've got somebody who's got a small dispensary in a big city and they don't have room to grow a lot, there may be another dispensary somewhere that, that will have a larger grow site and be able to exchange with them. So,
and Representative Bright, was the thinking that, you know, we don't want, you know, marijuana coming in from other states or other countries. We just want to kind of keep it an enclosed system, or what's the thinking
It's
there?
About the federal law. The minute we cross a state line, it gets DEA involved.
Very interesting. Okay, well, great question, Scott. Thank you. And let's go next to Demi, waiting in Rochester. Hi, Demi. Go ahead. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hi. My name is Debbie Mueller. I'm actually
Debbie. Okay, I'm sorry.
Rochester.
Yeah.
That's okay. And what I wanted to comment on was a few minutes ago, the conversation was sort of taking the route that that this bill didn't allow for money for treatment programs and enforcement and that sort of thing. And I think it's really important to take a reality check. We have a huge problem in our state with drug use, particularly opioid addiction. I think cannabis use is very high. I mean, cannabis isn't truly addictive, but I think to lay this giant problem, and I know there's been many in law enforcement who say that this is the largest problem facing our state right now, but to lay this problem on the floor of this relatively small population of people who would benefit from medical marijuana, I think is just, it's not what the reality is. And this isn't where we should be looking for funding for treating one of the biggest problems that's facing our state right now. I've recently started doing some routine screening on my patients. I'm an obstetrician, and I don't have a lot of data yet. We've only recently started, so it's small numbers. But in my first month, I have a 25% positive rate for cannabis, and these are in pregnant patients. So I know this is a big problem.
So what are you saying then, that we really shouldn't be so concerned about medical marijuana leaking out into the public and causing addiction? We should be really more focused on opioid addiction? Or I'm not quite sure what you're trying to get at there, Debbie.
Well, I think that we have a huge use anyway. I think that cannabis is readily available. I don't think people are going to need to necessarily go to dispensaries to get it. I don't think that there's a problem getting it right now. But to basically pin this greater problem that we have of substance abuse, and I know that you've done other stories on it and how widespread heroin use has become and prescription opioids, you know, to kind of put this all on the feet of this small program that's really, I think, quite worthy, I think is a little unfair.
Yeah, I think we're planning a show on Zohydro, Debbie, so you'll be interested in that, right?
Yeah,
the new
yeah.
one coming on
right.
the market. Thank you very much. So it's a matter of perspective, she's saying. What do you think, Lieutenant Encarnacio?
Oh, I agree with her to a point. Opioid addiction is definitely much more prevalent in New Hampshire communities today. And we were having a discussion before we went on the air about all the problems that we are facing with the heroin. However, I don't think that, you know, justifies saying, well, we shouldn't look for any kind of funding for treatment for a potential problem. And she mentioned herself that, you know, she has seen people come in, you know, that are pregnant with marijuana in their systems. It she sees it as a problem, just not as bad as the opioid problem. So, yes, I agree that we should be treating the opioid addiction problem. However, I don't think we should brush the cannabis, the potential for the abuse of cannabis under the carpet, because we know that cannabis is a gateway drug, and we want to, you know, obviously keep that out of the hands of children. And by treating at that level, hopefully we prevent further addiction into opioid drugs.
Go ahead, Representative Brett. I can see you want to jump in.
Thank you. I have a real problem with that gateway theory. It's been disproven that it's actually there's no physiological evidence that cannabis leads to anything else. If anything, it's the illegal status of cannabis that is a gateway, because you go to the same person for both drugs, you're exposed to both.
So he or she says, hey, you like the marijuana, why don't you try this? Is that what
right,
you're
saying? Right, they have it, yeah. Also, somebody who's willing to step across the line for something that's illegal like cannabis will be more likely to step across the line for something else. The real gateway is our attitude towards drugs. And if anything is a gateway, I would suggest that it's alcohol.
To other drugs.
Right.
All right. Yeah. Well, all of you, this has been a lot to work through. And I want to ask everybody, I'll turn to you first, Michael Holt. So sort of what's next in this complicated kind of back and forth process in getting this law implemented?
Well, the department is entering rulemaking as we speak. Our first set of rules on the patient registry side of it will be made public, released as of next week.
So who can register and who can't?
Yep. The public comment period starts next week. We have a public hearing on that set of rules for scheduled for May 29th at the Department of Health and Human Services. As we move forward with rulemaking with that set of rules, we continue to work very diligently on developing the rules for the alternative treatment centers. And that set of rules will come later this summer, followed by the release of an RFP for the application to become an ATC later in the fall.
Again, RFP is Request for Proposals, ATC Alternative Treatment Centers. These are people saying, hey, I want to get involved in this business. Here's my proposal.
All with the target of issuing licenses to ATCs by January 2015.
Okay, very quickly, Representative Wright, again, you introduced the grow your own option. That's before the state Senate now. You want to make any predictions? Pass the House.
They really need to pass it so that patients can have immediate access now and protection under the law.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll be watching that vote, obviously. Thank you all very much for being here. Representative Wright, thank you, and good luck with your wife's health condition.
Thank you very much.
That's Representative Ted Wright. He's a Republican from Tufton Borough. Lieutenant Encarnacio, thanks for giving us your time.
Thank you.
That's Lieutenant John Encarnacio. He's with New Hampshire State Police Narcotics Investigations Unit. Michael Holt, thank you also for being here.
Thank you.
Michael Holt, Rules Coordinator at the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services. Again, all three of our guests today serve on the state's Therapeutic Use of Cannabis Advisory Council. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Alan Cohen. Our intern is James Pouliot. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Canoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Canoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. The Senate's big vote on whether to repeal the death penalty takes place today. A New Hampshire judge rules the state's tax on hospitals to be unconstitutional, potentially blowing a huge hole in the budget. And the son of retired Yankees legend Mariano Rivera is playing baseball in Laconia this summer. Send us your thoughts by email or Facebook and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show is next at 10 o'clock on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our listeners, and from the Rudy Group, serving successful families and businesses with sophisticated planning and investment management for over 30 years at UBS Financial Services, member FINRA SIPC. And from Kentucky Creamery, milk fresh from their family's farm to your family's table in returnable glass bottles in stores from New London to southern New Hampshire. KentuckyCreamery.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1. WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. Doctors and their patients often don't have the information they need on the relative effectiveness of different treatments. Clinical trials provide invaluable data, but they can't and don't cover the myriad of individual circumstances in the real world of patients.